Recreation and Park Commission at 10:10 a.m. Ashley, will you please call the roll?
Commissioner Anderson?
Here.
Commissioner Clark Herrera? Commissioner Louie?
Here.
Commissioner Mazzola?
Here.
Commissioner Wintraub?
Here.
And Commissioner Hallisey and Commissioner Zort have excused absences. The San Francisco Recreation and Park Commission acknowledges that we occupy the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone peoples, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. We honor the Ramaytush Ohlone peoples for their enduring commitment to Mother Earth. As the indigenous protectors of this land, and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As stewards of parkland, we recognize our duty to honor the Ohlone through thoughtful and informed preservation and interpretation of ancestral land. As uninvited guests, we affirm their sovereign rights as First Peoples and wish to pay our respects to the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush community. Good morning and welcome to the Recreation and Park Commission meeting this Thursday, November 21st, 2024. I will make my announcements very brief today. Public comment will be available for each item on the agenda. For items not listed on the agenda, the public should comment on item 4 or item 9, which is general public comment. And I also want to announce that our agenda will be taken slightly out of order today to account for time. So we're going to move items 2 and 3, the president and general manager's report, towards the end of today's agenda. And 4, right?
Yes.
Chair? Okay. So 2, 3, and 4 will come after item 8.
Okay.
So now we are going to move to the consent calendar. And before I take public comment on the consent calendar, commissioners, is there anything on the consent calendar you'd like to take off consent today? Okay, now we'll move to public comment, and this is on the consent calendar, item 5. Is there anyone in the room who'd like to comment on item 5? Come on up. You'll have 2 minutes.
Item 5.
Well, let me turn your mic on. There you go.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Diane Matsuda, and I am on an ad hoc committee to create an interpretive panel at the Sharp Park site. It is a site that wrongly incarcerated people of Japanese, Peruvian, Italian, and German descent during World War II. We were able to receive a grant from the California State Library's California Civil Liberties Public Education Program to do this, and I hope to have your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, I'm Christina Olivolo. I'm on the Sharp Park Interpretive Panel Committee, and I'm a representative of Le Donne d'Italia. I'm a historian of Italian internment, an Italian-American who grew up in Pacifica, and I'm a San Francisco resident. This is an important project of historical significance. In addition to Japanese and Germans, hundreds of Italians were also unjustly locked up at this detention center, and many more threatened to be sent there, typically held for 2 to 3 months simply because the U.S. was at war with Italy and they were Italian, some even with U.S. citizenship. 52,000 California Italians, most having lived here decades, still had Italian citizenship when the war broke out and therefore were subject to arrest and detention here at Sharp Park. They were brought from as far as Eureka in the north, Monterey to the south, and everywhere in between, the East Bay to Stockton, Napa Valley, the Peninsula, North Bay, and of course San Francisco, the largest Italian population in the western states at that time. Le Donne d'Italia and I personally support this project and are thankful to the SF Board of Supervisors and SF Rec and Park for supporting having an interpretive panel placed here. And we are extremely thankful to Diane Matsuda and the Japanese Cultural and Community Center of Northern California for securing the grant and in-kind gift so that this important history of what happened to Japanese, Italians, and Germans can be told at the site in Sharp Park where this happened. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Grant Din. I'm a Bay Area resident who has spent a great deal of time researching the history of World War II internment at Angel Island and also at Sharp Park. I'm a member of the informal committee that is developing content for the interpretive panels at Sharp Park and wish to encourage you to accept this grant from the State Library to tell the story of German, Italian, Japanese, and other immigrants who were held because of their national origin. I've been combing numerous sources and so far have a list of over 400 Japanese immigrants from the West Coast, Hawaii, and Peru who were held at Sharp Park. A small number were women who had separate quarters. The reason for their incarceration was largely because they were community leaders, ministers, martial artists, language instructors, and photographers. It's important to note that because of the 1790 Naturalization Act that allowed only free white persons to become naturalized, none of these Japanese immigrants could have become U.S. citizens. When the war broke out, they were classified as enemy aliens with very few rights. In addition, there were hundreds of Italians and German immigrants who were also considered enemy aliens, as Christina noted. Sharp Park is one of many sites that were run by the Department of Justice and U.S. Army during World War II, including Fort McDowell on Angel Island here in the Bay Area, Tuna Canyon in L.A., Ellis Island in New York Harbor, and Honolulu in Hawaii. It is very important that the history of these sites be told, especially in the physical locations where they once stood. It has been great to be able to work with the Rec and Park Department on this project that will serve to educate the public for generations to come, and with the San Francisco Public Library, which will help keep an archive of these stories. Thank you for helping us tell this story.
Next speaker.
Good morning. I am Deanna Powell-Legumina, and I have written and researched extensively on the Italian population of San Francisco and California. I support the project of the signage at Camp Sharp Park. Unconscionable was the internment and relocation of the Japanese. So too was the internment and relocation of the Italian enemy aliens, as well as Germans, that denied them their constitutional rights without cause. The government's plan to not only incarcerate, but to repatriate some of these Italian aliens because their country of birth had declared war on the United States, and to exchange them for captive Americans in Italy was morally and legally wrong. Yet none of the Italian enemy aliens were ever found and convicted of treasonable crimes, and only a few were deported. The rest were detained at Sharp Park and other camps throughout the United States, denied the means to their livelihoods, businesses, and separation and disruption to families. They were left to an unknown fate. Their inclusion in the signage honors them and their families as we seek to remember their courage and bravery facing unjust discrimination. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Good morning. My name is Julia Dondero. I'm a current board member of Italian Community Services and a past president of La Donna d'Italia, and a proud San Francisco resident. Like many Italian Americans, I was unaware of this dark chapter in our local history during World War II when Italian Americans were interned at Sharp Park Detention Camp. It is a fact that it has been largely unknown, even to the descendants of those detained, in comparison to the internment of the Japanese Americans. As a member of La Donna d'Italia, an Italian Women's Club in San Francisco, we've been working to shed light on this forgotten history. I am proud that we've opened dialogue between generations of Italian Americans, sharing stories and uncovering the truths within their own families. I wholeheartedly support the project to document the history of Italian detention alongside the Japanese and German Americans, and as well, I learned today, Peruvians. This interpretive panel will serve as a powerful reminder of these injustices of the past and a testament to the resilience of the human spirit. Thank you for your consideration.
Are there any other members of the public in the room? I know we have some hands raised on our WebEx. Okay. Please unmute the first caller. You'll have 2 minutes.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Matthew Molia. I'm a board member of the Ligori Club.
Internment.
with many detained right here at Sharps Park. This interpretive sign is a critical opportunity to honor the struggles faced by all groups detained
Excuse
at Sharps
me, Matthew,
Park.
Can you hear me?
I greatly support.
Hello, Matthew?
Yes.
Sorry, would you start again? Because we blipped out for a second. I heard you introduce yourself. So you are a board member of the what club?
The Livery Club.
The Livery Club. All right, please go ahead. Sorry,
yeah,
you can repeat yourself.
Sure. We're an Italian-American organization, and we're deeply committed to preserving the community's rich history. I'd just like to highlight the importance, but often overlooked, role Italians played in the history of Sharps Park. After the U.S. entered the war, World War II, many Italian immigrants, including my grandfather, were labeled as alien enemies. The Italians faced discrimination, curfews, relocations, and internment, and many were detained right here at Sharps Park. This interpretive sign is a critical opportunity to honor the struggles faced by all groups detained at Sharps Park. I greatly support the efforts of the Japanese American community to share their story through this project, as their experience is essential and deeply significant. At the same time, I encourage the commission to ensure the sign reflects the Italian experience and that of other groups who were affected. An inclusive approach will provide a more comprehensive understanding of the internment policies and their impact on all the community. And I thank everybody for their time and considering this important opportunity to honor history inclusively.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think this is our last person with raised hand, if I'm not mistaken. You'll have 2 minutes.
Go ahead, sir or ma'am.
Hello, my name is Manuele LaTorre, and I am the president of the San Francisco Italian Athletic Club here in North Beach. The Sharp Park detention camp had a huge negative impact on the Italian community of San Francisco and the Bay Area, including members of my organization. Innocent, law-abiding, hardworking Italians living here during World War II were unjustly viewed with suspicion as potentially dangerous to the U.S. simply because they were Italian. This also impacted our club here in North Beach, as due to discrimination and negative connectivity, our club removed the name Italian during World War II, and it stayed that way until 1976, when we reinstated Italian back into the name of the club. The history needs to be known, and thankfully, you are telling this story, and you're going to represent all of the communities that were interned here at Sharp Park. I wholeheartedly support this, and my entire organization of 1,000 members supports this. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that was our last speaker. Commissioners, we're on item 5.
Do I have a motion and a second to approve the consent calendar?
Moved.
I second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposition? None. Consent calendar is approved. Colleagues, may I please move up items? Let's do the things that we need to vote on. I'm asking this because I'm going to need to leave early. I want to make sure we don't lose our quorum. I'd like to move up item 7 and then 8, if that's all right with everybody. Okay, let's go on to item 7 then, please, Ashley.
Okay. We're now on item 7, San Francisco Conservation Corps Sole Source Contract Award.
Do you have a visual?
No. Okay.
Thank you, staff.
Hi, good afternoon, commissioners.
Welcome.
Sarah?
Still morning where I sit, but whatever.
Oh, yeah, morning. Yeah, sorry, excuse me. So the item before you, I just want to flag that we are requesting a slight change to the wording from the agenda that was printed and posted. We want to reference in the agenda language section 6.73 of the Administrative Code. So the wording under consideration today is discussion and possible action to award a sole source contract to the San Francisco Conservation Corps in an amount not to exceed $500,000 and in accordance with Section 6.73 of the Administrative Code for their work on grant-funded rec projects where the department is either committed to consulting with the San Francisco Conservation Corps by the funding source or where consultation with San Francisco Conservation Corps strengthens that grant application.
All right, so when we vote on it, colleagues, I don't want Lauren to have to repeat herself. Did you all get that?
Got it.
Okay, I wrote it down too.
Appreciate
Ashley's
it.
Ashley's got it, and it's recorded, so cool.
Thank you very much. So this item draws on our strategic plan, Strategy 3 for Inspiring Investment, and Strategy 4, Inspiring Stewardship. Many of you may remember back in August, you approved a sole source contract with the San Francisco Conservation Corps for their work on the McLaren and Twin Peaks Trails project. Subsequently, we spoke with staff and the city attorney and realized that we had two other projects for which we were working with the San Francisco Conservation Corps within this next year. And in order to streamline staff effort and contracting, it makes the most sense to have a master contract and to pull off that master contract on every project as grants are awarded. So, as you know, the majority of capital project work is delivered through prime construction contractor, and the San Francisco Conservation Corps is brought in to execute portions of work for which they are well-trained and well-suited. Rec and Park project managers have discussed and refined project scopes with San Francisco Conservation Corps staff to identify specific work on four upcoming projects within John McLaren Park, Twin Peaks Open Space, Buchanan Street Mall, and India Basin Shoreline Park. The work includes, but is not limited to, light demolition, clearing and grubbing, planting, and plant establishment. Again, overall, California state grants are highly competitive. And without agreeing to identify work for the local conservation corps to do, we risk on missing out on those grant opportunities. So to summarize, awarding the sole source contract will allow the department to secure our highest scores on grant applications in a highly competitive environment, and the services from the San Francisco Conservation Corps are reasonably priced, comparable to other workforce development programs and other work on similar projects, and a master contract will reduce the administrative costs for the department. This sole source contract is authorized under Section 6.73 of the San Francisco Administrative Code and will save significant staff time in implementation.
Thank you, Lauren. This is a wonderful endeavor.
All right, is there anyone here to comment on item 7? Okay, are there any no hands raised on our WebEx? So public comment is closed. Commissioners?
Colleagues, do I hear a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second? If you have a comment, you can comment. I'm sorry, I forgot to give you a chance to comment. All right, and a second from Commissioner Wintraub. All those in favor state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Passed unanimously. Thank you,
Commissioners.
All right. We're now on item 8, Jackson Playground Improvement Project, Donor Recognition Plan.
You have a visual, right?
Good morning, President Anderson, Commissioners, Director Madland.
Good morning.
Commission Liaison Summers.
My name is Tamar Barlev with the Recreation and Parks Department's Partnership Division, and I'm here with my colleague Noah Levy from the Planning and Capital Division and the Jackson Playground Renovation Design Team to present to you item 8, the discussion and possible action to approve the donor recognition plan to recognize donors who support the renovation of Jackson Park Playground. Jackson Playground was built 112 years ago, and it inhabits the entire block bounded by Mariposa, 17th, Carolina, and Arkansas streets. The park is situated. Situated in the northern base of Petro Hill near Mission Bay and serves both an historic and rapidly growing area of San Francisco. The park is in need of an overhaul, and after over 10 years of community engagement and planning, in early 2023, this commission and the Board of Supervisors approved a $12.4 million grant agreement, and the commission unanimously approved a concept plan that envisions and renovates Jackson Playground. This plan was developed in model partnership between RPD and Friends of Jackson Park, the community and design partners Fletcher Studio and Jackson Lyles. Since then, this concept plan has received Phase 1 Arts Commission Civic Design Review approval and CEQA approval from the Planning Department. Jackson Park's complete renovation will be made possible via a combination of public funds allocated and private donations made to this project. The Friends of Jackson Park, our partner in this endeavor, is a neighborhood nonprofit organization that has been working for over a decade with the community to develop a project that addresses the existing and expanding needs of the community. As I mentioned before, the Friends have entered into a grant agreement with the department committing to raise $12 million for this project. Today, we are presenting the proposed donor recognition plan that will help achieve this goal. With that, I'm pleased to introduce David Fletcher from Fletcher Studio, who will present the donation plan. Fletcher Studio is the landscape architecture firm working on this project and has successfully worked with RPD on past projects like South Park to develop high-quality, unobtrusive donor recognition that is well integrated into the space. David Fletcher, Noah Levy, and I are available to answer any questions you may have after the presentation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Tamar. Good morning, commissioners. I understand that you have to leave a little early, so I'll accelerate things
a bit.
You're
good. Thank you.
I won't dwell too much on the plan, but basically we've worked with Rec Park to make the fields more safe by pushing them over and spreading them apart and then opening up more passive space, which is one of the number one requests from the community over the last 14 years or 12 years of engagement, and then also to program the full perimeter of the park. With this aerial, you'll see this a couple of times. You're looking down on the passive open space that would be at the most busy corner, the children's playground. You see the clubhouse addition, multi-use court. As Tamar mentioned, we have a pretty robust hierarchy of donor opportunities. The goal is also to integrate them. So we're going to show you images that talk about the hierarchy, but also ones that talk about the design and integration so that we don't clutter the site with lots and lots of signs. We've worked also hard to make very concise the program. So a hierarchy includes 5 different tiers. The first tier being spaces and then programs within spaces that can be donor opportunities. The second being amenities and spaces that are associated with the building. And then the last being smaller donations that might be plaques or might be pavers that are smaller opportunities to discreetly commemorate public contributions. So this image shows the first and then the last tier. The design approach to integrate them is very simple. It's just that you would wrap corners or you'd wrap a bench. It's just a very simple approach, or you'd bend them just slightly so that there's a change in direction and they don't feel, for the most part, flat. There's also opportunities to have donor recognition, but also have wayfinding. So you could show where the bathrooms are or other amenities within the space. And we like that idea that it's not just a plaque that's glued to something, you know. It could be a subtle aesthetic opportunity. And so for the first tier, these are the locations that we're seeing. They might be, for example, the clubhouse itself, the children's play area, the diamonds are major. And then the tier two would be more like the learning garden, which you see page or top of the page, the dog area, the picnic grove, et cetera. So again, integrating signs so that they may almost have a structural function in the sense of that they're integrated to the structure of the fencing or walls. The sign on the left is huge. We would not put a sign. It's more, the scale that we're interested in is more on the right. This might be a sort of freestanding sign that might be in a plant or adjacent to the fence, but connected to the ground. And then, as you'd expect, a more traditional clubhouse sign, similar to the one at the tennis center in scale. And then a medium-sized sign would be for the smaller spaces, such as the picnic grove, that could be connected to a wall. You can see below and just would wrap that wall. For the second tier, you can see the distribution. We'll look at the signs get really a lot smaller each time, kind of subtly wrapping a piece of wood or wrapping a door jamb or a vertical surface. And then finally, within the addition itself, having a donor wall that you can actually add to. We love the light of, you know, in Petrero Hill, it's one of the sunniest parts of the city, consistently, and want to celebrate that light by bringing color into the space, and that's a concept by Jackson Lyle's architecture. And with that, that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lovely.
All right, is there anyone in room 416 here to comment on item 8? Okay, come on up. You'll have 2 minutes.
Welcome. Hello.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Sarah. My name is Jude Deckenbach, and I'm here to give public comment in support of this donor recognition plan. First off, I'd like to thank the team of our architects from Fletcher Studio and Jackson Lyle's Architecture, as well as Rec Park staff, Tamara and Noah, and then Ling Yang, who is one of our Friends of Jackson Park board members who worked tirelessly to design this plan. I lived in Petrero Hill for 32 years and raised our 3 kids there, going to Jack's every day, pretty much, sometimes twice a day. And last century, I was part of a neighborhood group that worked with Rec Park and DPW to update the playground equipment, get rid of the carcinogenic materials that had been there for decades. And now it is more than time to do another upgrade and renovate this park to make it accessible for everyone. As Tamar mentioned, Friends of Jackson Park is a standalone 501c3. And at our well-attended community meeting last Saturday, we had over 100 people there. We rolled out our, what I like to call our equal opportunity fundraising campaign, because we would like to have the whole community of Jackson Park users, people come from every zip code to play at Jackson, invest in the park. And this donor recognition plan is an integral part of our campaign. So I'd like to thank you for your time, your consideration, and your approval of this project.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
I'm Elaine Stubbe. I've lived in the city for 33 years, 22 of them in Petrero. And in those years, I was part of a group of families that helped turn around a public school, Daniel Webster, in our neighborhood 18 years ago. and I was one of the first Daniel Webster families of your own Robin Modrikov's magical after-school program. That's when I got involved in the Jackson renovation movement 11 years ago. I wanted to thank you for unanimously approving our design plan in 2022. It's been a tremendous motivator having people virtually see the future park as we talk about funding the project to potential donors who, as you know, love a great plan, love to be part of a great plan, and love to be recognized for it. Our nonprofit of Neighbors has been doing a lot of the heavy lifting for this project to get done. We've raised 75% of a $40 million budget. As you're all familiar with, raising hundreds of millions of dollars for India Basin, it takes attractive bait to get the big fish. But more importantly, because this is such a community effort, we want to honor everyone who gives deeply with generosity of spirit. Our designers are well-versed in city projects. They are also local families and world-renowned. They've worked very hard with members of our board on this robust recognition plan, and I know that we can see this through. Rec Park and Jackson Park community, we need to help each other raise the remainder of the funds to get this project done so I don't have to say past 2028 that I've been involved for 15 years. This is more than a park renovation. This is a rejuvenation of a neighborhood that's ever growing from the Mission to the Bay, and that makes it a part of the revitalization of our city. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? Come on up. No further speakers in the room, and I don't think, no, we do not have any hands raised, so public comment is closed. Commissioners.
I'd like to say that we cannot do our work without the support of neighborhood activists and caretakers like all of you, so I just want to thank everyone that's been involved out in the community around this wonderful project. I always look forward to the people that would come and speak. We had one woman that came every single month for years to speak. What was her name? I forget. The red-haired woman. And yourself. So thank you all for that. Do I have a comment from Commissioner Louie?
I just want to say I like your stickers.
Yeah, great stickers. Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
So we see here, you know, all these beautiful parks that are built and renovated. You know, there's the success of the and the need of a philanthropic arm. And my question is for David. David, can you share with us some of the other completed projects that you have helped with around the city?
Rec Park projects specifically?
Just the David Studio.
Fletcher Studio. Oh, by the way, it's Booka, the red hair. The woman
yes, thank
is Booka.
You.
She is in charge of the community garden. And she's, anyway.
Okay.
There have been quite a few. A lot of housing, affordable housing projects. And then in Dogpatch specifically, a lot of, let's say, public spaces. The 22nd Street, we've been very dedicated to Dogpatch. So we worked with planning on the Dogpatch public realm plan. And from that, quite a few projects got greenlit. So Esprit Park is a project that I've been working on for quite a few years that is actually wrapping up soon. It's getting much needed rain. All the planting went in a couple weeks ago, so I'm really excited that it's raining as much as it is. And then many streetscape projects, sometimes interstitial spaces underneath, you know, underneath bridges. And we also have a pro bono part of our practice where a lot of projects actually start where community members come to us for a vacant lot or something that they're interested in. And then we help them, in a sense, form a Friends of, and then help them.
Thank you.
So I just have another. So, you know, people love to see their names recognized on walls and, you know, spaces. So have you done other recognition projects? Donor names?
Sure. Well, we have one single plaque that you guys approved for Esprit yes. Park because there was a single donor, UCSF. At South Park, we have these kinds of bands that occur in the paving, and we used little basalt pavers or basalt stone that was very subtly sandblasted with a name in it, and it integrates nicely and isn't too obtrusive. We've also used plaques, but try to avoid that. Try to have a solution that feels integrated with the park. You can imagine if your name is on something, it's better to have it, I think, integrated within the space than it just, again, glued on, you know?
Okay, well, thank you. I know President Anderson's name is at Francisco Park, since she did a beautiful job of the name recognition, and that park turned out nice. So I just want to kind of maybe visit one of these two other parks and just
sure, of course. I was involved in Francisco with the playground.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
All right, I'd like to take a vote on this. Do I have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposition? None. It is approved. Thank you, everybody, again. Thank you. We love our neighbors. We love our friends of. Thank you.
President Anderson, would you like to move to the San Francisco Zoo or general public comment?
I'd like to move to President's Report because I just have one thing. I want you to finish it for me later, Ashley, but I just want to say that we are missing our Vice President, Joe Hallisey, but he is going to be honored today. And hold on one second. I got to get the language here. So Commissioner Joe Hallisey is being honored by USF. It's called the Legacy at Chase Center. And an honoree is someone who's helped carry the torch of Don's basketball forward while also positively impacting the city of San Francisco. This is their second year of doing it. At the heart of the legacy is the crossroads of Don's basketball and the city. It was once a pillar of this community, and there are folks who have kept that spirit alive, and Joe Hallisey is one of them as a major way. As you know, he is the announcer for the Don's basketball and other things like the Irish Parade in San Francisco. So I just want to share with my colleagues congratulations to Commissioner Joe Hallisey. Thank you, everybody. All right. And now can we go on to the zoo item?
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Before we do that, just quickly, is there any public comment on the President's Report? Okay, seeing none, public comment is closed. We're now on item 6, the San Francisco Zoo.
Good morning on this rainy day. Tanya Peterson, Director of the San Francisco Zoo. With me is our Executive Vice President of Operations and Safety, Lamar Harris, who keeps us safe during these storms as well as prior atmospheric rivers. He also oversees our Employee Safety Committee, and he's going to finish up my report today. So thank you, Lamar. Speaking of reports, if I could use the pictures. Commissioner Louie had asked today about philanthropic partnerships as well as completed projects, so that's where the focus of my presentation will be today. We are your philanthropic arm. We have been since 1953. As I said, at Joint Zoo, I'm astounded in 1953 that those ahead of us were so broad-minded to already be thinking of wildlife conservation. The 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, the nonprofit managed children's zoo, insect zoo, our bald eagle programs, our membership, and so forth. It was deemed successful, self-sustaining, as tension arose between maybe the big zoo and other demands on Rec Park, the big zoo being the Fleischacker Zoo. A well-known politician, you may have heard of him, Willie Brown, came up with this great idea to merge us and to appropriate $4 million a year from the general fund so that we wouldn't be in conflict with you at Rec and Park. Merge the two entities together with a $4 million fee, because by then already we were rather an aged facility. At the time of the 1993, we did not pay for utilities. Those now are being paid by the society, and they're at a fee of 1.1 to 1.5, depending on the year. So I view that as a deduction deduction from the city fee, as well as now we pay parking taxes, something we didn't pay before. Those can be $250,000. But you all set our fees and our public comment and so forth. Let me talk about some highlights between us, and I thank you again for these terrific achievements. Since 1993, I think one of our best exhibits came out, the Robertson's app, African Savannah. This was a public-private partnership, millions of dollars between the society and the city. Still, what I think one of the highlights there in the front of the zoo, multi-acre, multi-species. Another highlight was the lemur forest, but of course with the Lippman family and also bond money, one of the largest outdoor lemur exhibits in the world. And that's contributed now to Lippman's investing more and more in the zoo, their more recent gift of being $7 million to expand the Madagascar Center. As we moved away from more less dependency, if you will, on public bonds, we started our own philanthropy arm. And here today, I'd like to recognize a few of our donors, the Friend family. I think Janie Friend is here. There she is in the back. She was the lead donor in our playground, the Friend Family Playground, where we taught conservation to kids, we hope in a fun way, using refurbished redwood, a banyan tree that refurbished itself, polar cap regions to talk about climate change, and also partnerships with UCSF and Lighthouse for the Blind to make this accessible to both the physically and other disabled kids in our area. Also with private funds, we started to reimagine some of those old buildings that had been in the Flyshacker Zoo. These were the WPA buildings built after the Great Depression. We did learn that it was probably cheaper to reimagine them than to try to demolish those thick concrete walls. And we reinvested in. So here's the interior of the South American aviary. I think it's a much better experience for the visitor, but also for the birds themselves. They're now free-flighted, and they enjoy many wellness enrichment attributes through the exhibit. We did similarly with old bear grottos that we had from WPA. The most standout feature is the Grizzly Gulch, done with the Hearst family here and some other families, where we added acreage to the old grottos that we inherited from the WP area. And I brought, just to give us context, the plans from the WPA. You can see back then what were deemed state of art. We had 5 bear grottos with finger walls, thick concrete walls between them. Over time, we invested in demolishing and removing those finger walls. That allowed us to expand the bear grottos, doubling their size for the black bears. These are rescued bears from Alaska. They are orphans, as well as the wolf grotto that houses now our nearly extinct gray Mexican wolves. We've done the same now similarly at the Big Cat area. We have removed 2 of the finger walls. That doubles the space for our lions. The 2 lions we have there, Marvella and Jasiri, they now have twice the size than their predecessors do. It is no easy feat to remove these concrete walls. They're about $500,000 each just to remove the wall. And then we put in training windows. This is where the keepers can use enrichment and also observe the animals closer. Being an urban zoo, this is common now in urban zoo design. We go up. So far, snow leopards climbing. We have 3 snow leopards at the time. We went up and expanded their exhibit by moving upward to adjacent to them, And there we have going up, I think, almost 3 floors, but mainly giving the snow leopards that ridge and a lot of rocks to climb upon. That, too, was with private funding, particularly the Toby family, a longstanding, generous family with the zoo. With that, we were able to take the former snow leopard home and house a jaguar from the Sacramento Zoo. The Sacramento Zoo is moving away from animals of the world and focusing on just African animals. This is a wonderful, lovely cat. Unfortunately, he has lost his tail during a mating episode. Mating can be dangerous. for humans and animals. Anyway, otherwise also going up, what we did is we increased the size for our great apes here, and particularly our orangutan. We have joined them now to the former elephant hall or the pachyderm building. They now can go up, which gives them more control. And also we've given them two of the grottos. Formerly those grottos were one for three species, that is the gorilla, the chimp, and the orangutan. Now the orangutans have those two grottos. But there are also areas that we have wellness and conservation behind the scenes that our visitors do not see for various reasons. And it was our honor and just one of those highlights of my career to have Senator Feinstein lend her name and that of her husband's to our Animal Wellness and Conservation Center. This houses our scientists. We have three scientists on staff full-time who analyze the data to ensure that our animals aren't just surviving at the zoo, but they're thriving. And also, this is where we keep most of our local conservation programs, such as the frogs and turtles of California. We do hope to, though, put these on exhibit, some of these programs, but as we went to our next stage, we, as you know, and you live painfully through this with us, we had to take a lot of things off exhibit and away from the public, the thought being that animals might actually be the transmitters of the COVID pandemic. So we spent 9 months lobbying our state officials and others to get ourselves back open. And I thank the mayor for all of her efforts as well as yours. I know Phil was here quite a bit. And I just had to point out the air filters that we had to try to filter the air of the 100-acre park we have, as well as wear a mask. It was a trying time, but I'm proud of the safety efforts. Again, thank you, Lamar, who helped with that. We did not one animal contracted COVID or came to, not only contracted, did not die from COVID. That was not true at other zoos and other sanctuaries throughout the states. But with that, we revisioned ourselves in the silos that we forced ourselves, staff siloed, we siloed, and even our strategic plan kind of has a viewing of silo. But we really tried to then force ourselves to think intentionally about conservation. And that's really where we're going with the visitor and our exhibit planning and animal acquisition. And I'll just point out a few examples there. The highlight of this effort has been now we are home to 14 critically endangered species. I don't call them critically endangered. This is an international effort of scientists who label certain animals critically endangered, endangered, and vulnerable, and threatened. We have 14 of the most critically endangered. I would say without a help from zoos, sanctuaries, and local NGOs, these animals do not have a chance in the wild anymore. They have a chance here at the zoo and other entities. We, like I mentioned, with local conservation, we're more and more efforts to put that on exhibit, particularly for children, that a lot of species here from the San Francisco garter snake, San Francisco damselfly, and then these turtles from Yosemite and other parts of California, they are worth saving too, and these are now housed in a former otter exhibit at the San Francisco Zoo. We also partner with international entities here, the Australian government, who dictates what eucalyptus leaves our koalas can have. Fortunately, on the west side of the city, we have a lot of eucalyptus, and our neighbors donate these to us, particularly in the neighborhood of St. Francis Wood, so we shout out to them for all the eucalyptus they donate to the zoo. And per requirements with the Australian government, we have the outdoor exhibit, and as well as this behind-the-scenes facility for the koalas and an indoor facility as well, so they get respite from the visitors. Here's an effort that I'm particularly proud of. This was an animal, the Mongolian horse, that went extinct in the wild because of efforts between zoos, particularly in Europe. We captured the frozen embryos and cells, and we have reproduced the species. We have two females here. They are in the area across from our equine therapy program. We are one of the few zoos in the world who have an equine therapy program, primarily used by the Promontory Center, our neighboring institute for disabled. We also, though, through private donations, have invested in art as a way to enhance and beautify the zoo, but also educate and highlight the breeding efforts of our giraffes. Here are reticulated giraffes. They're just going on the threatened list as well, a species at risk in Africa. We are highlighting our male and others who were bred in San Francisco Zoo. And thanks to another, I think, donor here, the Bakers and the Lipmans were thinking out of the box and out of the insect zoo to put insects in our new exhibit so that biodiversity is embraced throughout the zoo and especially as we grow our conservation zones through the zoo. So as we go forward, hopefully you'll see an effort and intentionality to create conservation zones and hotspots through the zoo, both signage, animals we acquire, and exhibits in the future. Lastly, and this is where Lamar comes in. Hello, Vitus. And our deputy director is here too, Vitus Lung. We want to do something special for our community on Thanksgiving Day. Lamar, would you like to sort of highlight for us there?
Yeah, we're very happy to actually introduce one of our new things. It's going to be the Dog Days at SF Zoo. It's typically the San Francisco Zoo is only for service animals. But however, we want to extend that opportunity to those with well-behaved dogs. So during that time period, we're going to have obviously a limited capacity amount there. We don't want the whole kennel coming through here. But with that situation, we're going to go ahead and open up the zoo to those with well-behaved dogs. It's going to be timed admission, of course. So we'll have a staggered amount of dogs per that, which we'll have information on that on our website. Per the California code, we will not have any outside animals in animal areas where our animals know physical barriers. So that will include areas like the aviary, the contact yard. So unfortunately, your dog can't come see the sheep, but they can wait outside and hang out in the area too, though, as well. So just another way we're trying to reach out to different communities and have everyone be safe here at the zoo at the same time. So looking forward to that.
Thank you. All right. Is there anyone here to comment on the San Francisco Zoo report in the room? Oh, okay. Come on up. You'll have 2 minutes. Oh, by the way, President Anderson has left, so Commissioner Mazzola is chairing the meeting now. Is that correct?
Yes, and okay. You're all in trouble now.
All right.
Hi there. My name is Justin Barker, and I'm with San Francisco Zoo Watch. You can find more information at sfzoo.watch. The animal welfare advisors on the Joint Zoo Commission meeting today shared a report that revealed that the San Francisco Zoo is not meeting the standards of their taking care of the animals, and that the zoo is unsafe for staff and the public. That's after a Chronicle reported that the concerns about management and instances of animal neglect, and that 97% of the union staff voted no confidence in Tanya Peterson. You know, I saw that report and I saw this presentation, and there was many concerning things. You know, if you look at the South American aviary, I was there recently and there was hundreds of mice. There was a huge infestation of mice. The jaguar that was mentioned lives in a 30 by 40 foot cage, and it may seem funny that he lost his tail in breeding, but it raises an issue about the state of breeding in zoos, that these animals are forced into small contained areas and forced to breed, and he lost his tail because of that. The zoo is really facing a lot of challenges, that there's infrastructure issues, and I'm deeply concerned that the management has kind of gone into this mode of just trying to really paint a rosy picture when it's not that rosy. And we're never going to be able to create real change if we can't get honest about the challenges that the zoo faces. And I really encourage this commission to really take the reports of the Chronicle and the reports of the animal welfare advisors seriously. And it's time for change and not just the status quo at San Francisco Zoo. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments.
Is there anyone else here to comment on item 6? Is there anyone else after this commenter? Okay.
Good morning. I am Rosemary Baccio Baker, and I am currently on the zoo board. I'm the new finance chair of the board, and I would like to say a bit about the diminishing city assistance. The zoo has made capital and program improvements with decreasing assistance from the city since the 1993 agreement. The city's yearly payment of $4 million to the zoo has not increased over that 30-year period, despite the fact that the city is now charging us for utilities and taxes, which results in us having less money than we did 30 years ago. The board has come up with a rough calculation of what that has cost us, given that it has not been adjusted for CPI and inflation over these 30 years, and it's well over $75 million that we are short, basically. Despite that, we have made significant improvements to the facilities, you know, basically from the generous donations of many of our donors. We've also now incurred significant sums of money in a 5-month independent investigation, which found that our animals are well taken care of. Despite that, we have zoo activists in the background agitating with a clear intent on closing a beloved institution. Their allies came to the zoo for a mere 2 hours, not 5 months. They had no AZA experience, and they've come up with this draft report based on conditions and criteria that are suspect. They have also created a website that is clearly defamatory.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hello, my name is...
A little closer.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry. My name is Elizabeth Beatty, and I am a docent at the San Francisco Zoo. I would like to point out that the American Zoo Association, of which the San Francisco Zoo is a member, has 200 institutions that they audit every 5 years. So that means that they are doing 40 audits per year. So they are professionals. They spend 4 to 5 days at each of the institutions, have access to public and private spaces for the animals. They interview the keepers, the staff, the veterinarians. So the San Francisco Zoo is meeting, you know, the top criteria from a professional organization who has vast experience auditing zoos across North America. And I would like to reiterate that some of the public comments that are coming out are from a short visit to the zoo from a guest perspective. They are not professionals. They do not have the vast zoo experience. So the audits are happening, and the San Francisco Zoo, the keepers and the staff are meeting safety standards and wellness standards for the animals and for the personnel. I just want to make one comment about the jaguar that did lose its tail. This happened in a different facility. We took in this jaguar, and the zoo is very careful. We've spent a lot of time, very slow meeting of our female and a male lions. It took almost a year for them to warm up and spend that time together before they even saw each other. They were just smelling each other from a distance. And, you know, so zookeepers, the San Francisco zookeepers and zookeepers in general do spend as much time and make their best judgments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Anyone else after that? Just checking. Okay.
Yeah, just me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm Sydney Dent from San Quentin Village, and I have read the report and I've heard all the arguments. But it just seems to me that the zoo needs a lot of money spent on it. It needs things improving, and it probably needs a bigger budget. So why are you thinking of bringing in the pandas? Because that's $1 million a year rental for each panda. And then you have to have a great facility. And I did visit the panda facility in the Smithsonian. And to match that, you would really have to expend a lot of your funds. So please, don't think about expanding the animals too much. Just take care of what we have. All right? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else here to comment? Okay. I don't see any hands raised on our WebEx, so I will close. Oh, okay. Anyone else after that? Okay. If there is, please just stand up here so that I can tell. Can you pull the microphone down toward you? Thank you.
At the last meeting of the zoo group down the hall, a thing was published, which was written by Mr. Barker and Jane, somebody who I can't remember her last name, which he says, of course, he did not write. And in that statement, he talked about how the Langer exhibit was the Langer exhibit was difficult for the animals to see. It was crawling with rodents, and it should be replaced to a grassy field across the way. I have here a picture of the Langer exhibit, which, yes, indeed, it is a chain link fence, but it's huge, and there are two huge enclosures for the Langers. They are breeding, so they are not upset. And it's not left up to Mr. Barker where we should put enclosures, because he doesn't know anything about that anyway. It's important to me and to a lot of other people at the zoo that somebody should spend more than 2 hours walking around the zoo and viewing like 3 or 4 enclosures and making a huge pronouncement, which gets published in the Chronicle. That is basically not true, and it's unhelpful. We do need money. I'd like to see more than that $4 million as the Oakland Zoo gets $7 million.
Thank you.
So that's what we do.
Is there anyone else here to comment? Okay. Seeing no further comment, public comment is closed. Chair, would you like to move to general public comment now?
Yeah, before we do, I'll just comment on this last item, the zoo committee. We just had our meeting, and I'm the chairman in the other room, earlier this morning at 9 o'clock. We've been dealing with these issues for about 3 or 4 months now, maybe more, in these meetings. And I think we got to a point today where we've had some good dialogue, and everybody that is involved was in the room. And I appreciate the zoo for being there, and Tanya and Vitus. And it's been very helpful. I know people still have strong feelings, but we got cut off today because we had to come to this meeting and somebody else needed to use the room. But we're going to continue talking about this and have an open dialogue at the next meeting in December and as long as it takes. So I'm hopeful that we're going to get to a good resolution. I know there's been issues, and I know above our heads, Supervisor Melgar has asked for an audit at their level, which is above our pay grade. So that's probably happening. But aside from that, I think, and I didn't have time to say this today in the meeting, but I will at the next meeting in December, I think that 40-year-old lease agreement needs to be looked at and renegotiated. So that's something I'm going to bring up at the next meeting and get the parties together to try to do something with that, because I think that will help mitigate a lot of these problems and hopefully get the city to kick in some more money. They haven't raised that $4 million in 30 years, as far as I've known. So there's a lot of things going on, and I think it's headed in a direction for us to make some changes that probably won't make everybody happy, but to get everybody at least satisfied that we're doing right by the zoo. And I commend everybody for the job that they're doing to get us to that point. So I don't know if any of my other commissioners want anything to say on this item. Vanita.
I want to thank Chair Larry for being such a loud voice and a good listener, and for reporting, because we don't know what happens at all our separate committee meetings. I mean, we really don't. I don't think there are any reports, you know, what happens at operations or capital. But, you know, the zoo is a landmark and a very important piece of San Francisco, and a lot is going on there. So we want to thank the zoo staff and Tanya and Lamar and for coming today. Personally, I like this Dog Day Thanksgiving at the zoo, so I'm going to make a reservation. Do I need to make a reservation? What time does that start, by the way? What time? No. No, with weather permitting, I'd like to come Thanksgiving morning. But what time does the 10?
9:30.
Okay. But I want to thank you, Larry, on behalf of the commission here for being a leader. And we know when you speak, it's from your heart, and it's the truth. So thank you.
Thank you. And it's just to be clear, it's not just me on the committee. It's Commissioner Sonia Clark Herrera and Commissioner Kat Anderson. So they've been very helpful also. So. Thank you. Okay, now we got President's Report, General Manager's Report. You want to do public comment first? What do you want to do?
Yeah, let's take public comment.
Okay.
If there's anyone here for general public comment.
So that'll be item 4 and 9 at the same time.
Okay, I don't see anyone here for general public comment. Are there any hands raised? No hands raised. General public comment is closed. As far as the President's Report, I think Kat covered anything that was outside of what Sarah's already going to cover. So I think we can move to the general manager's report. Does that work for you, Sarah?
That's fine. So president report is done. Let's go to general manager's report.
All right.
Sarah.
Thank you. As we know, it's November. And according to my GM report, that means the holidays have begun. It's a little scary. Happy holidays. We want to share some of the holiday celebrations happening in our parks over the next several weeks. On Thursday, December 5th, our department will hold its 95th annual tree lighting ceremony in Golden Gate Park from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. As you know, this is a free event that has carnival rides, games, holidays activities, lighted park attractions, live entertainment, food trucks, and of course, the ceremonial lighting of Uncle John's tree, which is the historic 100-foot-tall Monterey Cypress in front of the lodge and our offices. While you're in Golden Gate Park, you can check out the photosynthesis light show at the Conservatory of Flowers. The free light show starts 30 minutes after sunset and runs through midnight each night. It uses projectors to display psychedelic visuals on the Conservatory of Flowers building. Additionally, it's the season of tree lightings, so the Civic Center Plaza tree lighting will take place on December 4th, and the 7th annual People's Holiday tree lighting at Bodecker Playground happens on the 13th. Also on the 13th is the Marina Yacht Harbor Holiday Party, Winter Wonderland at the San Francisco Marina. It's a free event, and it's celebrating the marina's 100th anniversary with a lighted boat parade and family activities. The lighted boat parade is pretty spectacular if you haven't seen it before. And lastly, the Friends of the Great Highway are hosting Jingle All the Way on the Great Highway on December 14th from 11 to 2. There will be activities for everyone, miniature train rides, holiday karaoke sing-along. I feel like you would like that, Commissioner Louie. For more information about all these events can be found on our website, sfrecpark.org. Speaking of the Great Highway, as you have probably read, the voters have spoken on Measure K, and that measure passed by more than 54%. What that means is the Great Highway from Lincoln to Sloat will be closed to private vehicles to become a two-mile-long oceanside park. We at the Recreation and Parks Department have been working closely with our fellow city agencies to ensure that we can implement the will of the voters seamlessly as possible. And that includes key projects in this area, such as the Sunset Boulevard repaving, changing of turn movements at Lincoln and Sloat. We're working closely with the MTA on those. We are also working on all the necessary regulatory approvals to implement that. And similar to the JFK Promenade in Golden Gate Park, the Great Highway will include temporary art installations, murals, seating, further events, and of course, plenty of room for walking, biking, and jogging. We are hoping for an opening in early 2025, but we'll continue to keep you posted as we navigate the approval process. Many of you know, last month we opened the south portion of our newest park at India Basin Waterfront. The opening of 900 Innes Avenue marks a milestone in the progress of the India Basin Waterfront Park, which is the largest park project in our history. Construction crews are continuing to work on the park's north side, and people are still welcome while that construction is happening to enjoy the southern portion, which features a food pavilion for local vendors and community cooking classes, a maker's shop for boat building and other community projects, and of course our operations and maintenance building. The Bayview nonprofit Into Action is managing the food pavilion, providing a space for neighborhood food vendors, as well as culinary skills training, business incubation, weekend pop-ups, and a youth kitchen club. And as you know, because the contract came before you, the nationally recognized Bronx, New York-based youth development organization Rocking the Boat operates the Maker's Shop, providing year-round youth and community rowing and boat building program. We had the pleasure of being there last week for an executive staff meeting, and a few folks went out and rowed on the bay, which was very cool. Last week, we also broke ground on the South Sunset Clubhouse renovation project. Operated by the organization Self-Help for the Elderly since 1992, the clubhouse serves over 200 Sunset seniors daily. Participants, most of whom are low-income, monolingual Cantonese speakers, are offered daily hot meals, dance classes, fitness classes, activities, and more. Annie Chung and Self-Help are an amazing partner of our department. The renovation will reconfigure the 2,000 square foot facility's floor plan, creating a more open layout. And the improvements will include a renovated multi-purpose room, modernized kitchen, which is really critical for this service, an upgrade to existing restrooms, add an additional new restroom, and some storage space. The clubhouse was originally built in 1949 by San Francisco architect William Merchant and last renovated in 1991. So definitely ready for a freshen up. During the groundbreaking event, we gave a special thank you to State Assembly Member Phil Ting for always being a champion for our parks. For this project, which is a $5.3 million project, Assembly Member Ting helped secure $2.3 million in state funding. And overall, he has secured over $27 million for our Parks Department for 9 different projects throughout his time in office. We sincerely thank him, and we honored him at the event with a pretty cute map that had all of the parks that he has helped contribute to. Also going on in the Sunset, the 9th and Lincoln Gateway, connecting the inner Sunset with the Golden Gate Park, recently underwent and completed its renovation. We celebrated the completion earlier this month in a ceremony with London Breed and Supervisor Melgar. Thank you, commissioners, for being there. The Gateway at 9th and Lincoln is one of the city's most popular park entrances, connecting the park with the bustling commercial corridor at 9th and Irving. The project began construction in July 2023, added 2 new plazas to each side of 9th Avenue inside the park, and included central raised planters. The intersection also received safety improvements, like new paving, striping, and electrical upgrades, as well as a relocation of the Muni bus shelter on Lincoln. It was a $3 million project, and it introduces 5,500 square feet of fresh concrete and paving and native plants, a modernized irrigation system, and helps welcome our 24 million visitors to Golden Gate Park annually in a beautiful way that is consistent with our 1998 master plan. Last week, Commissioner Lewy and I were, along with Commissioner Halsey and Commissioner Zwart, had the pleasure of attending the 13th annual Greenagers graduation ceremony. The event celebrated 28 high school students from the Northeast and Southeast programs in the city who completed our five-month-long internship. During the program, high school-age participants traveled to different parks across the city, learning about habitat restoration, teamwork, community engagement, and public speaking. They worked almost 3,000 hours across 19 different parks in our system. I have to thank my staff, Jen G, Tracy Fan, Carissa Ortega, who managed the program. It's just lovely. And Commissioner Louie, thank you for being there, always supporting it along with Commissioner Halsey. Finally, and I have a hot off the press update on this one. Oh, of course, my computer locked me out. I'll just go with the this one. We are working with the Office of Community Infrastructure and Investment to transfer several parks in the Hunters Point Shipyard to San Francisco Rec and Parks ownership and maintenance. These parks are currently under the ownership of OCII, so this is very similar to Mission Bay, which came before you last year. They are being developed as part of a new neighborhood about a half mile east of the India Basin Waterfront Park. Once complete, the Hunters Point Shipyard project, the first phase of it, will provide 1,428 units of housing, 407 of which will be affordable, 20,000 square feet of commercial space, and 24 acres of parks and open space. There are currently about 16 acres of parks that are complete and open to the public. And we are working to begin management as soon as July 1st of 2025. As the successor agency to San Francisco's redevelopment, OCII's mission is to develop housing, commercial space, parks, and other infrastructure in their properties. We began, as you know, in July of 2023, we began managing the Mission Bay parks, as I said, also owned by OCII. And so we are working closely with them on a funding and maintenance agreement. And this will be to you, commissioners, likely in the spring of 2025. But we just did want to flag for you that this is in the works. And we are really grateful that other agencies like OCII, as you know, TIDA at Treasure Island, see the great work of our staff and are interested in us being the ones that maintain their parks to provide excellent parks to San Franciscans. And lastly, I'll just say a thank you to our staff for all of their storm preparations. Currently, we have two parks that are closed due to the storms and winds. Stern Grove and Pine Lake Park often are closed when it's this windy, but overnight we had only minor flooding and some minor debris cleanup, no massive tree failures, and that is a testament to the hard work of our incredible employees. So wanted to give them a shout out. And that is it for me.
Good report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any, it's all just us, huh, guys? Okay. I don't see any hands raised on our WebEx either, so public comment is closed on the general manager's report. And we are now on item 11.
Can I ask these commissioners here if they have any comments or questions on the president's report, general manager's report? Anybody? No?
I mean, I just, sorry to interject. I know we've had a long meeting. I just felt like this was a really nice recap and getting the heads up, and I did learn a little bit about how you restructured Mission Bay, and that seems to be going very well, right? So this partnership would probably try to mimic to some levels the MOU that you created with them similarly for funding.
Yes, absolutely. It's nice to have that one under the belt because we have a lot of experience of how to set this all up. And like, I should just add that, like Mission Bay, there is funding, there is tax increment funding from OCII to help support our work. And that's a key part of it, is figuring out exactly how much it's going to cost, how much of that should come to us. Yes. And when we start to see the funding not meeting our costs and how we deal with that in advance. So we're working through all of that now, and we'll be coming back to you with it.
Thank you. Okay, Ashley, I think we're on item 10.
Yes, we can take 10 and 11 together. Any any matters or new business from the four of you? Okay, and seeing no public comment is closed. Any public comment on communications? Nope, no public comment there. Adjournment.
All right, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Happy Thanksgiving.